We will start out tonight with a little study of the life of Abraham and events connected with it. And if you have your pencil and your paper handy, you might want to take down these, because I'm going to give you a number of dates and things that happened in the life of Abraham so that you can somehow get a story out of it. The more you can organize this, the better. Now, you can do some of this for yourself. I'm not keeping a secret what I do and so on. I just use the Companion Bible mainly for study, and I watch the notes, and I watch the dates in the margin. And for this one, I made free use of the appendix number 50 in the back. And I organized what I wanted out of those. Now, to get the genealogy of Abraham, we go clear back to Shem. And you will find in chapters 10 and 11 of Genesis the names of these progenitors of Abraham, his family tree, and follow them right down through from Shem to Abraham. Now, in the date that Shem was born, the nearest we can come to it is 2446, or 2446 B.C. At that time, his father Noah was 502 years old. And, of course, you remember that Noah was 600 years old when the flood came. So then Shem was born 98 years before the flood. See how you can take your figures and figure these things out? And if that is true, and Shem lived until Abraham was 150, Abraham could have learned about a lot of things that happened before the flood, 98 years of it. And I can just imagine that Shem could have told his great-great-great-grandfather down the line, or grandson, Shem could have told his great-great-grandson down the line about 9 or 10 times, a lot of very interesting things. And it's interesting, too, to see how many of these ancestors from Shem on were living until Abraham was born, and we'll get into that. Very interesting story. And so Shem helped build the ark, and he stood the storm and lived for many years afterwards. Now, I said Shem was born in 2446. 2348, 98 years afterwards, was the flood. So now you have the flood date. I said 98 years, you see, and so there it is. 2348 B.C., the flood. Now, if you would subtract that from 4004, well, you could tell how far it was from Adam. That's a little arithmetic for you to work into. Just subtract 2348 from 4004. Now, 2 years, yes, 2 years after the flood, Arphaxad was born. That is 2346 B.C. See, the numbers get smaller all the time before Christ. Well, then, some 35 years after that, Selah was born, 2311. And then, in 2281, Heber was born. Now, we got the word Hebrew from Eber. You can see, just adds an H on it, Heber, Hebrew. And the word really means from beyond the flood. He was one who lived beyond the Euphrates River. That was sometimes called the flood or the river. Well, then in 2247, several years later, Peleg was born. Now, it was in his lifetime that the earth was divided. And people are very much divided as to what this word divided means. Some think that the divided up into nations and peoples and so on. And some think it was when the earth went through a great catastrophe of some kind, and the continents and so on are distributed as they are, whereas in Genesis 1, it indicates that all the land masses were one, in one piece at one time. And, of course, there are the conjectures that the coasts of North and South America would fit up against Europe and Africa, and so on. Now, whatever it was, in the time of Peleg, the earth was divided. And he was one of the fellows who died before Abraham was born, just a few years before. That is 2247, Peleg was born. In 2217, 30 years later, he had a son by the name of Reu, R-E-U. And then he had a son by the name of Serug. He was born in 2185. So that'd be about 32 years after Reu was born. He had his son Serug. Then Serug had a son by the name of Nahor. Now you're beginning to get down probably to names that you recognize. Nahor, that was Abraham's grandfather. Now Nahor died just before Abraham was born. So Abraham never got to be acquainted then with Peleg and Nahor. All the rest of these, Abraham got to meet with and talk with and learn something about them. And those that, like we mentioned here, are Arphaxad, Shelah, Eber, Reu, Serug, and Terah, which was Abraham's father, and he was born in 2126. Well, now, in 1998 B.C., Noah died, 950 years old, and that was just 2 years before Abram was born. All right, get that. Noah died just 2 years before Abraham was born. And, of course, by that time, Shem was a pretty good, getting to be a pretty old fellow, too. Now, Abraham was born in Ur of the Chaldees. Well, that's not very far from Babylon. And Nineveh's on over a little farther. And Abraham is spoken of as being a Hebrew, so he too came from beyond the flood, and that is literally true. He left Ur of the Chaldees and went up to Haran, keeping on the north and east side of the Euphrates River, and didn't cross it until he went down into Canaan. Now, 1996 is a date that we have of Abraham being born in Ur of the Chaldees. Ur of the Chaldees has been excavated, and lots of the buildings have been found, the floor plans at least, and some of the walls and so on, so they can reconstruct a great deal. It was a very modern, up-to-date city for its time. They had central heating in their houses. They had hot and cold water running, and they could take shower baths, and they even had glass utensils and so on. I have seen some of the glass that was made before the flood. And so this was an up-and-coming city, Ur of the Chaldees, until something suddenly happened. Now, I said that in 1996, Abraham was born. In 1946, 50 years afterwards, when Abraham was 50 years old, he got his first call, his first message from God. And that happens to be the same year that the folks started or left off the building of the Tower of Babel. And so then we can see that Abraham was also a part of that Exodus, we call it, from Babel when the peoples were scattered because their tongues were twisted up. If you want to know something about why that they had to go from Babel, I would cite you to Romans 1:18-32, and I think we better take a little bit of that. Romans 1:18-32, so we understand what happened back there. All right, Romans 1:18-32. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth or suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. I just might stop there and say that they had the gospel in the stars back in those days. That was given to Adam, and all down through there, by the time they got to the Tower of Babel, they had twisted that thing up and made astrology out of it, and started to worship those images in the skies, and the names of them were lost and have never been recovered even yet today. That's what they did with their first revelation from God. So you can see here that they didn't want to know God. Verse 21, because of when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and our foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools, and exchanged the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like the corruptible man, and to birds, and four-footed beasts, and creeping things, bugs, and beetles, and whatnot. Wherefore God also gave them up. That's verse 24. Gave them up to uncleanness through the lusts of their own hearts, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worship and serve the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this cause God gave them up, there it is again, verse 26, unto vile affections, for even our women did change the natural use into that which is against nature, and likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one toward another, men with men working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error, which was meet. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over. Twice he gave them up, and here in 24 and 26, now in 28, God gave them over to a reprobate mind, to do those things which are not convenient, being filled with all ungodliness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventor of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. Now that's the kind of company that Abraham was brought up in. That's the kind of people he mixed with over there. In order to the Chaldees, not far from Babylon, the whole thing was corrupted. And God saw possibilities in that man, even though he was an idolater, and his father's idolaters some time back. He saw possibilities in that man, and he talked to him. And when he talked to him, Abraham obeyed. Did just what God told him to do. And we have him mentioned. You take a concordance and see the number of times that his name is used in the Bible, both in the Old and New Testaments, and you find that many, many times. I haven't even counted them lately. Paul speaks of him in his earlier epistles, especially in Galatians and Romans. And Romans is a later epistle. Galatians is one of his first. And others mention him from time to time. He was the father of the Israelitish race. And he's spoken of as Father Abraham. Now, when he was born in 1996 B.C., that was the kind of a world that Abraham was born into. It wasn't very propitious. It wasn't a very nice place to bring up a young man, was it? Well, he went his own way, seemingly, for 50 years. Don't know what he did during that time, whether he paid much attention to his ancestor Shem. It may be that he did. I wish we had some little stories about those times at that time. Now, it was rather customary in that time for the ancestors to live in the homes of the children. And how many there were in that household when Abraham was born, I wouldn't know. We have all this list of these folks here living up until his time, except two of them, Peleg and Nahor. And maybe they were all under the same roof. I don't know. Just think of all of the grandparents way back there that Abraham could talk to and learn from. Quite an opportunity. And, of course, kids, the usual thing, do like their grandparents, and they ask them questions and like to know what they did when they were little and so on. It's nice to have a fellowship like that between children and their grandparents. They can learn a lot. So now, his first call in 1946 B.C., age 50, and as I said, that is the year of the Exodus from Babel, and we see the reason why here in this first chapter of Romans. Well now, we go back and read in Genesis about this leaving Ur of the Chaldees, and, well, let's go back to Genesis 12. I think that I can find what I want here. Now, you'll notice here that before we have the story in chapter 12, we have a couple of verses here in chapter 11. Now, maybe I'd better give you a little bit more before I go into that here from chapter 11, so we may know more of the setting. I take it for granted sometimes that people know this Bible well as I do, and then I have to stop and think, well, now some of them never read it. So let's start out with chapter 11, the first 9 verses, and get the setting for this leaving of the Ur of the Chaldees. Then we can get into the rest of it. And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. And it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, that is the peoples of the earth at that time, as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. Now that's between the Tigris and the Euphrates River, down toward the Persian Gulf. And they said one to another, go to, let us make brick, and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone, a substitute. They were going to build them a tower for worship and so on, and the first thing to do is to have a substitute. And of course, their whole religion was a substitute for the true religion too, wasn't it? And we have a lot of substitute yet today. Instead of using brick and stone, they use brick. Now, when we find buildings to be built in the Bible, temples and so on, there's stone used. And even the temple, which is the church, the body of Christ being built today, is made of living stones, we find in Ephesians. And instead of making up mortar, they didn't take time to do that, they used slime. Now that is pitch or bitumen, and we have other names for it. They have slime pits of this same sort of stuff in Los Angeles. Island of Trinidad has a great big lake of it. Now we call it asphalt. So that's, now you know what I'm talking about. Nice sticky stuff. And you know when they put it on those bricks, that the bricks would go to pieces and break before the mortar would. It was too good for the bricks. Well, I have seen some modern building, that is, when I say modern, some built maybe 80, 100 years ago, that they did the same thing. They used real brick, baked and so on, and used a mortar that you'd never get the mortar off the bricks without breaking them up. And so they used brick for stone and asphalt for mortar. And they said, go to, let us build us a city and a tower whose top, and the words are say may reach, but that's in italics, may be crowned with heaven. In other words, the signs of the zodiac put in a circle on the top of it. And let us make us a name. Oh, yes. Make us a name. Contrast that with the name that is above every name. And people today are trying to make a name for themselves and disregarding that name which is above every name. Make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. And that's what they were told to do, was to go out and be fruitful and multiply. Now here is a sort of a figure of speech, making it as if God were a man, so if we'd understand it better. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men builded. Now, he knew all the time what was going on. He was there, but this is put in for us to understand what was going on. And the Lord said, behold, the people is one, and they have all one language. And this they begin to do. Now, this building, they begin to do. Now nothing will be restrained from them, which they have imagined to do. And isn't that about right today? Go to. So he says the same thing that they did. Let us go down, and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build a city. Therefore is the name of it called Babel, because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth. Now, it's rather interesting to take the sons of Noah, Ham, Shem, and Japheth, and see what the Bible has to say of what different parts of the country where they settled. And you can make a map and put lines and arrows across and show where the different peoples went to from that common center. Rather interesting. You want to draw one little line and reach it clear out to Ireland, Wales, and Scotland. Now those were the Gaelic people. At the time of Paul, they had only gotten about far as Galatia. And of course, Galatia, you only have to go one step further than that, you have the Gauls. They were the same people, the Gaelic people. And you can trace the Greeks and the Romans, so on. And it's interesting when you're studying languages and so on in school to look at a map like that and see how that the peoples and their languages were started out from a common center and spread over the earth. So that gives you a little picture are the times in which Abraham was born, the conditions under which he lived, and the things that he had to come up against. Just think of one man believing God against all of these odds and obeying God and doing what God had told him. Now, what I wanted you to do was to look at the last verses of chapter 11, the last two verses, verses 31 and 32. This is anticipating what we see in verse 12. You don't even have the order for this to be done yet, and yet we're told he did it. But you'll find that this isn't what Abraham was told to do. And Terah, Abraham's father, took Abram, his son, and Lot, the son of Haran, his son's son, and Sarah, his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went forth with them from Ur of the Chaldees to go into the land of Canaan, and they came unto Haran and dwelt there. And the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. And that very year is when Abraham left Haran. Abraham was 75 years old. That was in the year of 1921 B.C. And Terah was 430 years old when he died. So he'd lived to a ripe old age. Now let's see what we have here in verse 12, because this is going to come before these other two verses we just read. Now the Lord had said, see, this is past tense now, taking it back before these other two verses. Now the Lord had said unto Abram, get thee out of thy country, one, get thee out of thy country, and from thy kindred, two, and from thy father's house, three, and to a land I will show you, four steps. Get out of the country, get away from his kinsfolk, and out of his father's house, into a land that he would show him. And I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee, and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee, and in thee shall all families of the earth, or tribes, or whatever you want to call them, nations, be blessed. Now, you just got a curse put on them and scattered, and our language is all tangled up. Now, Abram is picked out of all this mess to undo this thing someday, be a blessing to the nations. Now, you see, he had been told to get out from his kindred and from his father's house. And as soon as his father, Terah, heard it, he takes the bit in his mouth, as we say, and goes ahead to do it himself. And so they lost 50 years at Haran. And they had to stick at Haran. God wouldn't take Abraham any further until the old man had died. A little picture there, too. But when Terah died, immediately, God spoke to Abram again and told him to go. Well, Abram hadn't fulfilled all of this thing yet. I don't think for a minute that there were just a few of those folks that left in this little band. For Terah was a wealthy man. Abram was a wealthy man. They had flocks and herds and servants. Not too long after this, we find that Abram had 218 men who were armed and could fight as soldiers. And with that little band, he licked Hammurabi, the great king of that time and the great lawmaker before Moses. That's another little item to keep in mind. And Lot went along with Abram, and he had a great deal too. And so we see in verse 4, so Abram departed, as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him, And Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. Now, at this time, we have a little something that comes into prophetic times. When God was talking to Abram this year that he left Haran, he told him that his people be delivered from a slavery in a land and a people they didn't know 430 years from them. And that came right out to the date, the Exodus from Egypt. Now there's another little item. When Abram started to go into Palestine, at that time, from Haran, he was told about his 430 years. Now you'll find another time when there's 400 years, but that comes from the time of Isaac. And we'll get to that. Now we don't know when Abram went down to Egypt with Sarah, his wife, and she was a beautiful woman, and the king seemed to fall in love with her, and Abram lied and to save his skin and got her about into trouble. But he came out of Egypt in 1912 B.C., and he was 84 years old. They didn't have any children, and Sarah suggested that he take her handmaid Hagar and probably have an heir that way. It was a custom at that time. It wasn't wrong. Under the law of Hammurabi, that was perfectly legal. So when he was 85, a year after he left Egypt, he married Hagar. And she was an Egyptian woman. A year after that, Ishmael was born when Abraham was 86. In 1897, 13 years after that, Abraham was given the covenant of circumcision, and Ishmael was circumcised. That is the reason why that all the Mohammedans, we call them Islam today and so on, circumcised their youngsters when they're 13, whereas Israel were commanded to circumcise the boys when they were 8 days old. But you'll find among the Mohammedan peoples who claim Esau for their father and through Abraham that they circumcise at the age of 13. So now you see that little Ishmael was about 13 years old then when he was circumcised. That was the covenant of circumcision given in 1897. In the next year, after that, when Ishmael was 14, Isaac was born, the son of promise. Now, when Isaac was born, Abraham was about 100 years old, 1896. From 1996, his birthday would give just 100 years. So Isaac was born, and Abraham was just 100 years old. And Ishmael, I said, was 14. Now, in 1891, 5 years later, Hagar and Ishmael were cast out. That would make Ishmael 19. And here is where a further promise is given, and it's mentioned in Acts 7:6, 400 years. Let's turn to Acts 7:6, where Stephen is speaking of this. Acts 7:6. Now let's take the fifth verse, because I kept the connection here. And he gave him none inheritance, that's Abraham, in it, that is a land, no, not so much as to set his foot on, yet he promised that he would give it to him for a possession and to his seed after him, when he as yet had no child. And God spake on this wise, that his seed should sojourn in a strange land, and that they should bring them into bondage and entreat them evil 400 years. Now you have to rearrange the Greek in that, because they were not entreated evil, they were not slaves for 400 years. They were only 215 years. In fact, this 430 we have, the sojourning was 215 years before they were taken, went into Egypt under Jacob. And then there was 215 years from Jacob going into Egypt until the Exodus from Egypt. So you have to watch your order and so on and the figures. Now, in Galatians, Paul has some things to say about the bond woman and the free woman and the allegory. We won't need to go into that. You probably remember that. But Hagar and Ishmael are cast out. Remember now that Hagar was a young man of around 19 years. Ishmael, yes. Ishmael. Now, in 1863, when Isaac was 33, and Abraham 133, see, he was born and Abraham was 100, so there was 100 years difference between them, Isaac was offered up as a sacrifice, that is, not in deed exactly, but at least in purpose. A rather interesting story, and I thought maybe I would be able to read that to you tonight, but that'll have to be put off probably for another time. A very interesting story. We'll not go and read that particular one now. We'll leave that for some other time, because this is a highlight in the life of Abraham. That was 1863. In 1859, about 4 years later, Sarah died. She was 127. And she died. Now you can begin to figure out a little bit and see the difference between their ages. There was 10 years difference between the ages of Sarah and Abraham. So she was 90 when Isaac was born, and Abraham was 100. Now she lived 27 years after Isaac was born. In 1856, 3 years after Sarah died, Isaac married Rebekah. Now you remember the story of Abraham sending his son Eliezer back to Haran, not back to Ur of the Chaldees, but to Haran. I used to think when I was a youngster, it went clear back to Ur of the Chaldees. Well, that was left forever. But you see, some of the family stayed there. They didn't all of them go with Abraham. And so some of the family stayed there. So the servant was set back and got Rebekah as a wife for Isaac. Now, a very interesting story. Rebekah consented to marry a man she'd never seen. But she heard a great deal about him. I think that there's a little lesson maybe in that. We won't stop for it. Now, 10 years after Isaac married Rebekah, Shem died. All right, here he has been on the scene all these years, Shem, at the age of 600. And after the death of Sarah, And in this year that Shem died, Abraham was 150 years old, and he remarried. He married a woman by the name of Keturah. Now, we don't know very much about her. And by her, he had 6 sons. You wouldn't recognize the names of any of them, excepting possibly one. And this one seems to have been quite friendly with and confederate with Ishmael a great deal, Midian. And it was said at the time that Joseph was sold into Egypt that the Midianites and the Ishmaelites could hardly be told from each other excepting for the nose rings that they wore. They wore a different style of nose ring. So, that gives you a little bit of the story there. Now, 10 years after Shem died, and Abraham had married Keturah, Jacob was born, son of Isaac. Now, Abraham was 160 when Jacob was born, and Isaac was 60. So, he was getting along in years when his firstborn son was born, but not as bad as Abraham, his father, who was 100 when Isaac was born. As 1836 that Jacob was born, and 15 years after that, when Jacob then was 15 years old, Abraham died. He was the age of 175. Isaac was 75, and as I said, Jacob was 15. And the last of these that we've been talking about, these ancestors here, died just a little after Abraham died in 1817, which would be 4 years later. Eber died. And so after Abraham died in 1821, and Eber died in 1817, 4 years after that, of all of these we've been talking about, only Isaac and Jacob are left. Now, of course, Esau comes in here, but he doesn't really count because he wasn't a child of promise. And we're speaking of especially those who are the children of promise. Now you can see here the overall picture of this giving these dates and the main things that happened. Now there are a lot of things that happened in between times. And you would have to read a great portion of your book of Genesis to get all of those details. But if you get the outline and know what happens here, the main things that happen, it helps a person a lot to see the connections. Now, I think I can turn here to, I had this turn a while ago, I think, to, well, let's turn Genesis 23, give you where I got some of my figures. Chapter 23, first verse. And Sarah was 107 and 20 years old. 127 years old. These were the years of the life of Sarah. And Sarah died in Kirjath Arba, the same is Hebron in the land of Canaan. And Abraham came to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. And Abraham stood up from before the dead and spoke unto the sons of Heth, saying, I am a stranger and a sojourner, or a pilgrim, with you. Give me a possession of a burying place with you, and I may bury my dead out of my sight. Well, I thought he was given all of this land. Why does he have to go to the children of Heth to get him a place? Now, Heth was a son of Esau, and he was the father of the Hittites, Hethites or Hittites. And they had this land around here where Abraham wanted to bury Sarah. And the children of Heth answered Abraham, saying unto him, Hear us, my lord. Thou art a mighty prince among us. In the choice of our sepulchres bury thy dead. None of us shall withhold from thee his sepulchre, but thou mayest bury thy dead. Told him to take her choice. He could have one. Said he was a mighty man and a prince and so on. They'd be glad to do that for him. Abraham must have behaved himself pretty well to have had good friends like that among the Hittites. Remember, Uriah was also a Hittite. In fact, some of David's strongest men in his army were Hittites. They were good fighters. And Abraham stood up and bowed himself to the people of the land, even to the children of Heth. And he communed with them, saying,